U.S. has the worst rate of maternal deaths in the developed world. Every year, 700 to 900 women die from pregnancy or childbirth-related causes. And 60% of those deaths are preventable. Now, a new study is showing that states that give midwives a greater role in patient care have better results when it comes to maternal and neonatal health. ProPublica reporter Nina Martin joins us to discuss her recent article called A Larger Role for Midwives Could Improve Deficient U.S. Care for Mothers and Babies. It's part of the Lost Mothers series that looks at maternal mortality in the U.S. It recently won this year's George Polk Award in journalism. Also joining us is Laura Zeidenstein, Associate Professor of Nursing at Columbia University Medical Center and Director of the Nurse Midwifery Program. I would like to welcome you both to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. So, Nina, you spent a year or so, maybe more, focusing on maternal mortality. Yeah?
Yes.
Why?
Well, because we were seeing studies that have been coming out over a period of time showing that the rates of maternal mortality in the U.S. were rising at a time that they were falling in other affluent countries, every other affluent country, and that the U.S. rate for maternal deaths was by far the largest in the industrialized world.
And you have this really simple approach, too, which is you just want to look at 2016 and look at all of the women who died in childbirth. How many have you found so far?
We found more than 160, and we've fact-checked and so forth. And so I think we published 134 names, and we have more that we're collecting.
So what have you learned from telling these women's stories?
Well, I think that what we've learned, first of all, is that maternal deaths, the reasons that women die as a result of pregnancy or childhood are very complicated. There's a lot of different factors. But one thing that's a really important factor, systems-level issues, medical providers and doctors, nurses, hospitals. I think in the past, in the absence of information, very often women tended to be blamed for the problem or characteristics involving women. They were poor. They had chronic medical conditions. They didn't have great access to care, so they didn't get prenatal care. And now what we know, both from some recent studies by the CDC Foundation, as well as our conversations with the families of women who died, and also with the stories that we've collected as a result of our partnership with NPR, we've collected more than 4,600 stories at this point of women who nearly died, close to that, and family members and what we've discovered is that there's the systemic problems of doctors and nurses often not understanding symptoms, not women being misinformed, but doctors and nurses being misinformed, hospitals being unprepared for major emergencies, and also just lack of access to care for people who live in places like rural areas where there's just not any doctors or nurses or midwives available. All are factors.
You know, Laura, I want to bring you into the conversation here because you're working with women, obviously. So how does this jibe with what you're seeing when you're with women and when they're delivering?
Well, with women, when they're delivering, we have a situation where teamwork is key, and teamwork and respect among the providers is not it's not an inherent part of the U.S. healthcare system. As Nina wrote in her really very brilliant piece, recent piece, our peer countries, the other rich countries in Europe, Scandinavia, Australia, New Zealand, Britain, the providers that mostly have single-payer systems and providers whose the outcome of the mother and baby and the family are number one rather than profit, and the teamwork puts the midwife in the center of the care, practicing full practice authority, but in collaboration with highly trained obstetricians and perinatologists with the outcome of the mother and baby as a priority. And in the U.S., we have basically only about 7,000 practicing midwives doing less than 10% of births nationally.
Versus how many OBGYNs?
Nationally, I'm not sure. I really know New York City. So in New York City, there are about 3,000 OBGYNs in New York City to 300 midwives. So here also we're doing 10% of the births, and we have And we're not the center of the healthcare system. We can be disposed of, actually, in most hospital settings. And midwives take care of, 99% of midwives practice in hospital settings. And most of the women that midwives take care of are women with comorbidities or chronic health problems. The workforce is not supported. The midwifery workforce is not supported by the system. I totally agree with what Nina is saying. Is it's at this point when we're talking about what could improve it is changing the whole system.
Yeah. So, Nina, let's talk about this new study. What did it find about the role of midwifery in pregnancy and births?
Well, this was really a groundbreaking study. And what it did was, it looked for the first time ever at hundreds of laws around the country in 50 states in the District of Columbia that govern what midwives can do. There's a huge diversity in those laws around the country, whether they're able to practice within their quote-unquote scope of practice, meaning that they can do everything that they're trained to do, including delivering babies, giving prenatal postpartum care, giving other kinds of women's health care, whether they're paid for by Medicaid, whether there are restrictions about on where they can, the kinds of things that they can do in hospitals, get hospital admitting privileges, whether they have to get a doctor's permission in order to be able to practice. So it looked at all of those laws, and then it ranked states by how well midwives were fully integrated into the system, meaning that they were able to work more closely with doctors. And then it looked at, I think, 9 indicators of maternal and infant health, including infant mortality, preterm birth, C-section rates, induction rates, breastfeeding, and kind of layered one over the other. And what it found was that in states that have the highest rates of integration, those were also the states that tended to have the best outcomes for mothers and babies. The states that had the lowest levels of integration, the most hostility to midwives, were also states that tended to have the worst outcomes for mothers and babies by these measures.
How did New York and New Jersey do? Do you know?
New York and New Jersey actually did pretty well. New York, I think, ranks as number 5 in integration, and New Jersey ranked as number 4, which means that there are fewer laws, and in those states, there's more acceptance of midwives, especially most midwives, as Laura says, are certified nurse midwives. So they're basically nurses who then have an extra layer of training, a graduate training to do their midwifery specialty, and then certified midwives who have slightly different level of training. But what it doesn't, so and actually both of those states have pretty good outcomes as well in things compared to other states, and compared to the national average, I should say, in things like prematurity, neonatal mortality, vaginal birth after C-section, breastfeeding. But as Laura says, this is a piece of a bigger picture, and there's a lot of work to be done still in New York, and in fact, even in the best states, to fully integrate. To get rid of, I guess, what is often a level of suspicion that I hear from a lot of doctors and from a lot of midwives about their mutual roles and how to work together to make it more effective and more collaborative and better for everyone.
And just so people aren't confused, like some people might confuse a midwife with a doula, but they're different.
Right.
And midwives are trained to deliver babies. That is their whole, right?
Well, Laura, you should jump in here since you actually train midwives.
Right, exactly. I've been an educator for 20 years of midwives, and midwives are educated at the highest level in academic institutions. Doulas are wonderful, important support people for women in pregnancy, but not clinically or medically trained, and midwives are licensed in the state they work and have completed at least a master's or a doctorate degree. It's a graduate studies for 2 to 3 years post nursing if they became a nurse first, which is not required. It is required in a lot of states, but not in all states. But what Nina's talking about, too, and the systems problem, is that if we went to a system that did put midwives more at the center, we actually don't have a big enough midwifery workforce that we could fulfill that, because the barriers are bigger than they extend into midwifery education, where we only have 38 programs in the entire United States, and we have no federal funding, which means that educating midwives is a very expensive endeavor. And there are a lot of barriers for people who want to become midwives. It's very expensive. So it would have to really, the systems that have been successful in our peer countries
would really have to be beefed
really
up,
really have examples
like. Yeah.
of how you could easily, I think, in 2 years, increase the workforce if we got federal funding for midwifery training, and hospitals had a motive to educate, train midwives in their centers to integrate them into their maternal health care system. But like medical students or medical education, right now midwifery is an outsider. And although in New York we have a law that prohibits discrimination of midwives as a category in terms of employment in a hospital, many hospitals on their own choose not to employ midwives. And so midwives are basically, we work in the United States as pretty much a very disenfranchised group. And a hospital can, if an OB chair changes to another person that loves midwives, they're midwives, and otherwise there aren't. So integrating midwives into the system, which has to be a priority, includes changing the entire way of increasing the workforce.
I am speaking with ProPublica reporter Nina Martin, whose recent story is A Larger Role for Midwives Could Improve Deficient U.S. Care for Mothers and Babies. You were just hearing there from Laura Zeidenstein, who's from Columbia. Later on in the show, award-winning journalist Rania Abuzaid, with her new book, it tells the stories of everyday Syrian citizens who are just trying to survive the war. And Gugi Watayango joins us to discuss his new memoir he just published about his arrest and detainment in Kenya's maximum security prison. You are listening to Midday on WNYC. We will be right back after a break. You are listening to Midday on WNYC. I'm Mary Harris. I am here with Nina Martin from ProPublica. You know, Nina, one of the things I found so revelatory about your writing is that you talk about the history of midwives in this country, because it used to be that this was just the way business was done for women when they were giving birth. But you get to the fact that midwives sort of became the center of this long-running culture war, and it's about gender and it's about class. I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about that.
That's right. So, midwives, I mean, babies throughout human history have been delivered by non-medical birth attendants, known as midwives in some places. And that started to change around in sort of the industrializing countries in the 19th century, as medicine became more professionalized and doctors' groups began pushing for a monopoly over obstetric care. And so that was something that was happening in other countries as well. But in this country, one of the things that was also true of midwives that made them more suspect in the eyes of many doctors was that they were mostly immigrants in areas like New York City. They were in the South. They were mostly black women who were commonly known as granny midwives. And so there's a real overlay of racism and class warfare, along with sort of concerns about economic competition that really affected how midwives were, how the medical profession, how doctors saw midwives. And then there was this other thing that happened as well, and it was really related. And it was this sort of, as doctors began to sort of argue for why they should be in charge of birth instead of midwives, they started to argue that birth was basically something, a pathologic process.
A problem.
Yes, exactly. And it required scientific knowledge and hospital equipment, forceps and scalpels and
stuff we try not to use.
Well, stuff that has since often turned out to be actually really detrimental to the health of both mothers and babies. And so, and midwives then and still sort of have always have said that, you know, that birth is a natural process or a physiological function. And the battle around that continues to this day. And the fact that there are so few midwives in places that could really use them, like rural parts of the South, harkens back to this era of basically having midwives wiped out because of racism and sort of economic competition.
Yeah. And the thing is, this stuff all gets tangled together because, like, for instance, I don't think most New Yorkers would understand that if you gave birth at an HHC public hospital in the city, you would probably get a midwife. That's right, Laura, right?
Right, right. If you were giving birth in health and hospital in H&H, formerly HHC hospital, of which there are 11 hospitals, in 9 of them, there are strong, you know, in terms of numbers, midwifery services. And yes, you might not know that the person taking care of you is a midwife, but that's not just because of the provider difference. It also goes back to, I don't know if it was Mary or Nina talking about full practice, practicing to your full scope.
Right.
In our hospitals in New York, midwives often are not practicing to their full scope and are often working. It's not an integrated team. It's, you know, medical heavy team, so that the physiologic benefits or the midwife's ability to work to promote physiology and recognize if anything moves towards pathophysiology really don't get highlighted and don't get utilized to the maximum, which could improve maternal and infant morbidity and mortality rates in New York City, which, as we know, a black woman in New York is 12 times more likely to die in childbirth than a white woman.
Yeah, and I mean, I love this quote that Nina got from someone named Jenny Joseph saying, there's such a depth of racism that's intermingled with medical systems that if you're practicing in the midwifery model, you're mitigating this without even realizing this.
Yes, because of the individual person-to-person, which we are very time-intensive, and economically beneficial because we use technology so judiciously only when necessary. But you also need more of a workforce to be able to provide that time-intensive paying attention to every physiologic moment. And that is key. And working incredibly seamlessly and respectfully with perinatologist and obstetric surgical consults, so that if there is a medical issue, problem, and or emergency, it's a seamless and well-communicated system, which we do not have.
Right.
One of the things I was going to say is that I've heard this from many people, that one of the problems that is results is that because there's not this seamless kind of connection, that very often the only times in a lot of places, Alabama would be a good example, and I've even heard this in New York, that a lot of times a doctor may not get called in to deal with a patient until that patient is transferred. So midwives are supposed to take care of low-risk patients, and they do that job very well, and so when they do their job well, doctors don't see them. And even if they're doing their job well by saying, oh, wait a second, this woman has signs, she needs to be transferred to a doctor's care, because the doctor may not ever see the patients only in those sort of situations that feel to them like crises. Mm. They have this idea that basically all midwives, all care that is given by midwives results in in these crises.
Outcome.
Exactly. And that's one example of why integration works again. Yes.
And you know, while we're talking about structural issues, I feel like we should talk about North Carolina, because in North Carolina, you know, there are dozens of counties without a maternal care provider at all.
Right.
Why can't midwives just step in there?
Well,
you laughed.
Yeah, that's complicated. It also has very restrictive laws.
Right, exactly. North Carolina... Yeah. I was going to say North Carolina has a law that basically says that doctors have to essentially give permission in that state for a nurse midwife to practice at her scope of practice. And so in 31 counties in North Carolina, there are no obstetric providers, there are no OBGYNs, and so There's nobody to give midwives permission to practice.
Yeah, and one of the other things that stood out to me is that in Alabama, you spoke to the only black woman midwife, and she couldn't practice?
Right.
It's amazing. Alabama, in some ways, is just as restrictive, if not more so, than North Carolina. I would say more so, because although North Carolina has this rule, it actually has more midwives. Alabama only has 13 nurse midwives who
are total
in the entire state, and one of them is black. And in her case, she's not just a certified nurse midwife, she's also a doctorate. She's a doctorate in nursing practice. She's taught college level. She worked as a midwife for many years, but because she lives in a part of the state where there are no doctors who are able or willing, and it's not just OBGY, the entire OBGY practice has to agree. If you're going to work with a midwife where she is, the entire OBGY practice has to agree to work with a midwife, not just one doctor within
that
practice.
Everybody has to.
And the hospital, which owns the practice. And so therefore, she's not able to practice to her scope. She can't do prenatal, postpartum, much less deliver babies.
And that's why it's a systems problem. I mean, the hospitals in the U.S., two that I can think of that have really the best teamwork and great outcomes are UCSF and Bay State Medical Center. Both of those have structured into their medical education that the midwives are who do the clinical training for the medical residents.
Well, let me jump in here, because I had a midwife birth and I had a doctor birth, and I vastly preferred the midwife birth. I thought it was superior care. So I'm just going to lay that on the table. But I do think there is this issue. You Nina, you quote this woman, Ginger Breedlove, who says the title midwife has multiple meanings, and that doesn't help efforts to promote the profession. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, there's a lot of different kinds of midwives, basically. So they're certified nurse midwives. The vast majority of midwives in this country are, like Laura, certified nurse midwives. Then there's other midwives who sort of fall more generally into a category of called direct entry midwives. And so sometimes they're called certified midwives. Sometimes they're certified professional midwives.
Actually, can I step in?
Yes, please do, Laura.
Certified midwives are equivalent to a certified nurse midwife. We are educated in the same way, and we stay, although one group isn't a nurse, we take the same certification exam.
Okay.
And then there's the one other kind, the CPM,
right.
The certified professional midwife. And the CPM practices exclusively out of hospital, in home birth or birth center. So they are not part of the 99% of the hospital births.
Mm-hmm.
The CNM and the CM, who go to nationally accredited programs that are equivalent, are midwives that can practice in any setting. But CPMs, also numerically, it's always good. People don't really realize this, that there's 7,000 or 8,000 practicing midwives in the U.S. Of those, there are 100 CMs. And there are 300 CPMs, so the majority are CNMs.
So the majority have more training.
Are nurse midwives?
Yeah. Yes.
And so, but right, and then it depends. But they're not licensed. I mean, nurse midwives are licensed in every state, but CPM, certified professional midwives, and CMs are not correct. Exactly, and so they their ability to practice in many states is severely limited.
Right.
So, if you want to make this choice, what do you do? Because you want to make sure you have the best options. You want to have the most well qualified person there. But do you do? What, I mean, after all of your reporting, I guess I wonder. Did it change what you think women should be deciding when they're giving birth?
I think that that's a good question. I think that what it made me really think about is that there's many sort of ways that our medical system needs to be improved, and one of them is just integration. Everybody needs to work together, collaborate in a much more closely and seamlessly than we have in the past. We're a very fragmented system in a very fragmented country, and so it's, I think that understanding, really knowing what are the laws and practices where you are giving birth, and whether your midwife, what she can actually do, and whether your doctor is going to accept what she could do, and not take basing what your doctor tells you, but the midwives and other women who've actually given birth with midwives. I think knowing that would be really important. Laura?
Yes.
I have been speaking with ProPublica reporter Nina Martin, whose recent story is A Larger Role for Midwives Could Improve Deficient U.S. Care for Mothers and Babies. I've also been speaking with Laura Zeidenstein. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you.